He was conscious of doing so.
Don't hurt him, Jack said.
I'll kill him, Bigger said through shut teeth, tightening his hold on Gus's collar, choking him harder.
Turn me loose,
Gus gurgled, struggling.
Make me,
Bigger said, drawing his fingers tighter. Gus was very still, resting on his knees. Then, like a taut bow finding release, he sprang to his feet, shaking loose from Bigger and turning to get away. Bigger staggered back against the wall, breathless for a moment. Bigger's hand moved so swiftly that nobody saw it. A gleaming blade flashed. He made a long step, as graceful as an animal leaping, threw out his left foot and tripped Gus to the floor. Gus turned over to rise, but Bigger was on top of him, with a knife open and ready.
Get up. Get up and I'll slice your tonsils.
Gus lay still.
That's all right, Bigger, Gus said in surrender. Let me up.
You trying to make a fool out of me, ain't you?
No,
Gus said, his lips scarcely moving.
You goddamn right you ain't,
Bigger said. His face softened a bit, and the hard glint in his bloodshot eyes died. But he still knelt with the open knife. Then he stood.
Get up, he said.
Please, Bigger.
You want me to slice you?
He stooped again and placed the knife at Gus's throat. Gus did not move, and his large black eyes looked pleadingly. Bigger was not satisfied. He felt his muscles tightening again.
Get up. I ain't gonna ask you no more.
Slowly Gus stood. Bigger held the open blade an inch from Gus's lips.
Lick it, Bigger said, his body tingling with elation.
Gus's eyes filled with tears.
Lick it, I said. You think I'm playing?
Gus looked round the room without moving his head, just rolling his eyes in a mute appeal for help. But no one moved. Bigger's left fist was slowly lifting to strike. Gus's lips moved toward the knife. He stuck out his tongue and touched the blade. Gus's lips quivered and tears streamed on his cheeks. Doc laughed.
Oh, leave him alone, Jack called.
Bigger watched Gus with lips twisted in a crooked smile.
Say, Bigger, ain't you scared him enough?
Doc asked. Bigger did not answer. His eyes gleamed hard again, pregnant with another idea.
Put your hands up, way up, he said.
Gus swallowed and stretched his hands high along the wall.
Leave him alone, Bigger,
G.H. called weakly.
I'm doing this, Bigger said.
He put the tip of the blade into Gus's shirt and then made an arc with his arm as though cutting a circle.
How would you like me to cut your belly button out?
Gus did not answer. Sweat trickled down his temples. His lips hung wide, loose.
Shut them liver lips of yours.
Gus did not move a muscle. Bigger pushed the knife harder into Gus's stomach.
Bigger,
Gus said in a tense whisper.
Shut your mouth.
Gus shut his mouth. Doc laughed. Jack and G.H. laughed. Then Bigger stepped back and looked at Gus with a smile.
You clown, he said. Put your hands down and sit on that chair.
He watched Gus sit.
That ought to teach you not to be late next time, see?
We ain't late, Bigger. We still got time.
Shut up. It is late,
Bigger insisted commandingly. Bigger turned aside. Then, hearing a sharp scrape on the floor, stiffened. Gus sprang from the chair and grabbed a billiard ball from the table and threw it with a half-sob and half-curse. Bigger flung his hands upward to shield his face, and the impact of the ball struck his wrist. He had shut his eyes when he had glimpsed the ball sailing through the air toward him, and when he opened his eyes, Gus was flying through the rear door and at the same time he heard the ball hit the floor and roll away. A hard pain throbbed in his hand. He sprang forward, cursing.
You son of a bitch!
He slipped on a cue stick lying in the middle of the floor and tumbled forward.
That's enough now, beggar,
Doc said, laughing. Jack and G.H. also laughed. Bigger rose and faced them, holding his hurt hand. His eyes were red, and he stared with speechless hate.
Just keep laughing, he said.
Behave yourself, boy,
Doc said.
Just keep laughing,
Bigger said again, taking out his knife.
Watch what you're doing now,
Doc cautioned.
Aw, Bigger,
Jack said, backing away toward the rear door.
You done spoiled things now,
G.H. said.
I reckon that was what you wanted.
You go to hell, Bigger shouted, drowning out G.H.'s voice. Doc bent down behind the counter, and when he stood up he had something in his hand which he did not show. He stood there laughing. White spittle showed at the corners of Bigger's lips. He walked to the billiard table, his eyes on Doc. Then he began to cut the green cloth on the table with long, sweeping strokes of his arm. He never took his eyes from Doc's face.
Why, you son of a bitch,
Doc said.
I ought to shoot you, so help me God. Get out before I call a cop.
Bigger walked slowly past Doc, looking at him, not hurrying, and holding the open knife in his hand. He paused in the doorway and looked back. Jack and G.H. were gone.
Get out of here,
Doc said, showing a gun.
Don't you like it? Bigger asked.
Get out before I shoot you,
Doc said.
And don't you ever set your black feet inside here again.
Doc was angry, and Bigger was afraid. He shut the knife and slipped it in his pocket and swung through the door to the street. He blinked his eyes from the bright sunshine. His nerves were so taut that he had difficulty in breathing. Halfway down the block, he passed Blum's store. He looked out of the corners of his eyes, through the plate glass window, and saw that Blum was alone, and the store was empty of customers. Yes, they would have had time to rob the store. In fact, they still had time. He had lied to Gus and G.H. and Jack. He walked on. There was not a policeman in sight. Yes, they could have robbed the store and could have gotten away. He hoped the fight he had had with Gus covered up what he was trying to hide. At least the fight made him feel the equal of them. And he felt the equal of Doc, too. Had he not slashed his table and dared him to use his gun? He had an overwhelming desire to be alone. He walked to the middle of the next block and turned into an alley. He began to laugh softly, tensely. He stopped still in his tracks and felt something warm roll down his cheek, and he brushed it away.
Jesus, he breathed. I laughed so hard I cried.
Carefully, he dried his face on his coat sleeve, then stood for 2 whole minutes staring at the shadow of a telephone pole on the alley pavement. Suddenly, he straightened and walked on with a single expulsion of breath.
What the hell?
He stumbled violently over a tiny crack in the pavement.
Goddamn, he said.
When he reached the end of the alley, he turned into a street, walking slowly in the sunshine, his hands jammed deep into his pockets, his head down, depressed. He went home and sat in a chair by the window, looking out dreamily.
That you, Bigger?
His mother called from behind the curtain.
Yeah, he said.
What you run in here and run out for, a little while ago?
Nothing.
Don't you go and get into no trouble now, boy.
Oh, my, leave me alone.
He listened a while to her rubbing clothes on the metal washboard. Then he gazed abstractedly into the street, thinking of how he had felt when he fought Gus in Doc's pool room. He was relieved and glad that in an hour he was going to see about that job at the Dalton place. He was disgusted with the gang. He knew that what had happened today put an end to his being with them in any more jobs. Like a man staring regretfully, but hopelessly, at the stump of a cut-off arm or leg, he knew that the fear of robbing a white man had had hold of him when he started that fight with Gus. But he knew it in a way that kept it from coming to his mind in the form of a hard and sharp idea. His confused emotions had made him feel instinctively that it would be better to fight Gus and spoil the plan of the robbery than to confront a white man with a gun. But he kept this knowledge of his fear thrust firmly down in him. His courage to live depended upon how successfully his fear was hidden from his consciousness. He had fought Gus because Gus was late. That was the reason his emotions accepted, and he did not try to justify himself in his own eyes, or in the eyes of the gang. He did not think enough of them to feel that he had to. He did not consider himself as being responsible to them for what he did, even though they had been involved as deeply as he in the planned robbery. He felt that same way toward everyone. As long as he could remember, he had never been responsible to anyone. The moment a situation became so that it exacted something of him, he rebelled. That was the way he lived. He passed his days trying to defeat or gratify powerful impulses in a world he feared. Outside his window, he saw the sun dying over the rooftops in the western sky, and watched the first shade of dusk fall. Now and then a streetcar ran past. The rusty radiator hissed at the far end of the room. All day long it had been spring-like, but now dark clouds were slowly swallowing the sun. All at once the street lamps came on, and the sky was black and close to the housetops. Inside his shirt, he felt the cold metal of the gun resting against his naked skin. He ought to put it back between the mattresses. No, he would keep it. He would take it with him to the Dalton place. He felt that he would be safer if he took it. He was not planning to use it, and there was nothing in particular that he was afraid of. But there was in him an uneasiness and distrust that made him feel that he ought to have it along. He was going among white people, so he would take his knife and his gun. It would make him feel that he was the equal of them, give him a sense of completeness. Then he thought of a good reason why he should take it. In order to get to the Dalton place, he had to go through a white neighborhood. He had not heard of any Negroes being molested recently, but he felt that it was always possible. Far away, a clock boomed 5 times. He sighed and got up, and yawned and stretched his arms high above his head to loosen the muscles of his body. He got his overcoat, for it was growing cold outdoors, then got his cap. He tiptoed to the door, wanting to slip out without his mother hearing him. Just as he was about to open it, she called, "Bigger?" He stopped and frowned. "Yeah, Ma?"
"You going to see about that job?"
"Yeah."
"Ain't you going to eat?"
"I ain't got time now." She came to the door, wiping her soapy hands upon an apron.
"Here, take this quarter and buy you something."
"Okay."
"And be careful, son."
He went out and walked south to 46th Street, then eastward. Well, he would see in a few moments if the Daltons for whom he was to work were the ones he had seen and heard about in the movie. But while walking through this quiet and spacious white neighborhood, he did not feel the pull and mystery of the thing as strongly as he had in the movie. The houses he passed were huge. Lights glowed softly in the windows. The streets were empty, save for an occasional car that zoomed past on swift rubber tires. This was a cold and distant world, a world of white secrets carefully guarded. He could feel a pride, a certainty, and a confidence in these streets and houses. He came to Drexel Boulevard and began to look for 4605. When he came to it, he stopped and stood before a high, black, iron picket fence, feeling constricted inside. All he had felt in the movie was gone. Only fear and emptiness filled him now. Would they expect him to come in the front way or back? It was queer that he had not thought of that. God damn. He walked the length of the picket fence in front of the house, seeking for a walk leading to the rear, but there was none. Other than the front gate, there was only a driveway, the entrance to which was securely locked. Suppose the police saw him wandering in a white neighborhood like this. It would be thought that he was trying to rob or rape somebody. He grew angry. Why had he come to take this goddamn job? He could have stayed among his own people and escaped feeling this fear and hate. This was not his world. He had been foolish in thinking that he would have liked it. He stood in the middle of the sidewalk with his jaws clamped tight. He wanted to strike something with his fist. Well, goddamn. There was nothing to do but go in the front way. If he were doing wrong, they could not kill him, at least. All they could do was tell him that he could not get the job. Timidly, he lifted the latch on the gate and walked to the steps. He paused, waiting for someone to challenge him. Nothing happened. Maybe nobody was home. He went to the door and saw a dim light burning in a shaded niche above a doorbell. He pushed it and was startled to hear a soft gong sound within. Maybe he had pushed it too hard. Oh, what the hell? He had to do better than this. He relaxed his taut muscles and stood at ease, waiting. The doorknob turned. The door opened. He saw a white face. It was a woman. Hello? Yes'm, he said. You want to see somebody? I want to see Mr. Dalton. Are you the Thomas boy? Yes'm. Come in. He edged through the door slowly, then stopped halfway. The woman was so close to him that he could see a tiny mole at the corner of her mouth. He held his breath. It seemed that there was not room enough for him to pass without actually touching her. Come on in, the woman said. Yes'm, he whispered. He squeezed through and stood uncertainly in a softly lighted hallway. Follow me, she said. With cap in hand and shoulders sloped, he followed, walking over a rug so soft and deep that it seemed he was going to fall at each step he took. He went into a dimly lit room. Take a seat, she said. I'll tell Mr. Dalton that you're here, and he'll be out in a moment. Yes'm. He sat and looked up at the woman. She was staring at him, and he looked away in confusion. He was glad when she left. That old bastard. What's so damn funny about me? I'm just like she is. He felt that the position in which he was sitting was too awkward and found that he was on the very edge of the chair. He rose slightly to sit farther back, but when he sat, he sank down so suddenly and deeply that he thought the chair had collapsed under him. He bounded halfway up in fear, then, realizing what had happened, he sank distrustfully down again. He looked round the room. It was lit by dim lights glowing from a hidden source. He tried to find them by roving his eyes, but could not. He had not expected anything like this. He had not thought that this world would be so utterly different from his own that it would intimidate him. On the smooth walls were several paintings, whose nature he tried to make out, but failed. He would have liked to examine them, but dared not. Then he listened. A faint sound of piano music floated to him from somewhere. He was sitting in a white home. Dim lights burned round him. Strange objects challenged him, and he was feeling angry.
and uncomfortable. All right, come this way. He started at the sound of a man's voice.
Sir?
Come this way. Misjudging how far back he was sitting in the chair, his first attempt to rise,